Welcome back, everyone. On today's episode, we are so lucky to be speaking with Dr. Lindsay Hastings, who is the Clifton Professor in Mentoring Research and Research Director of the NHRI Leadership Mentoring Center at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. We're also talking to Dr. Ben Kriya-Harker, who is a Clinical Assistant Professor for the Student Affairs and Higher Education Program within the Department of Educational Policy and Leadership at Marquette University. He also serves as the co-PI for the Multi-Institutional Study of Leadership, or MSL for folks who are familiar. And also, finally, we're speaking with Dr. Joshua Taylor, who serves as the director of the Hargis Leadership Institute at Oklahoma State University, where he works with curricular and co-curricular programs and gets to do a whole host of assessment and research projects within his role. But Mel, do you want to tell us a bit more about why these three are coming to join us today?
Absolutely. So, in addition to being leadership educators themselves in both kind of like co-curricular and curricular contexts, all three of these folks have been involved in some incredible research related to our field. And I think by extension, then have done quite a bit of assessment and evaluation themselves of programs and experiences, right? So, Lindsay, with her work on peer mentoring and leadership and leadership identity development. Ben, certainly with his long history of international administration and analysis with the MSL and socially responsible leadership. And Josh, with his work on exploring socially just leadership education and student leadership learning. We just have so much knowledge to gain from these three folks. I think in addition to being the scholars that they are, and certainly having some chops around assessment, evaluation, research, they're all just such warm folks and have wonderful stories to share that I'm just really excited for us to dive into.
Yeah, if folks are nervous about this episode, that's okay. These three make assessment, evaluation, and research feel much more manageable and attainable. So if you are nervous about the context of this one, we're promising it's going to be a really good one. So let's get to our guests.
Welcome back, everyone. I am so excited for y'all to get to know our guests today. So, friends, if you would, please introduce yourselves to the world of the NASPA Leadership Podcast. Who wants to start?
I can start. Hey, everybody, I'm Lindsay Hastings. I'm on the leadership faculty at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. I use she, her, hers pronouns. And I also get to serve as the research director for NHRI Leadership Mentoring, which is a collegiate and K-12 leadership mentoring program at the University of Nebraska. In what ways that I consider myself a leadership educator, my favorite origin story was that in undergrad, I was a secondary math education major. And when I was student teaching, I realized that I was spending more time talking with students about leadership than linear equations. So I realized that maybe leadership education was my path.
There it is. That's amazing.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Kriya-Harker. I use he, him, his pronouns. I am the clinical assistant professor here at Marquette University and also a co-principal investigator at the Multi-Institutional Study of Leadership. And so how I consider myself a leadership educator, I was kind of wondering or kind of milling about this response here. And I think I really just enjoy engaging with others in an iterative process of understanding leadership in deeper ways. It's a complex phenomenon that we're always kind of peeling back the layers on. And so I love engaging with people in the conversations about it and how we think about ourselves engaging in leadership. So that's what I would say.
I love that. Thank you.
Well, hello everyone. My name is Josh Taylor. I use he, him pronouns. I'm the director of the Hargis Leadership Institute at Oklahoma State University. And so in my role, I work with students both in curricular spaces. So we have like an academic certificate program, but also in co-curricular spaces. So we have a lot of student affairs type leadership development programs. And so in terms of how I see myself as a leadership educator, I've always been fascinated by how things get done, how problems get solved. And I found myself always wanting to partner with people or even just help students make a difference. I think there's something like deep inside of a lot of people that says that they just want to help others and make the world a little better. And so being able to connect with college students in that process has been a really, I think, great part of my career. I'd also say, though, a little bit of what Lindsay alluded to. I was a high school teacher for 10 years before coming to higher education. And I always found myself in those like leadership circles for K-12 education. And that was always what was the most fascinating to me. I was an English teacher. And so I found myself teaching Huck Finn and The Great Gatsby from an approach of equity and leadership, and not as much from like a literary criticism perspective. And so it was just a natural progression to make my way into higher ed leadership.
I love it. Thank you all for sharing. It's always so interesting to hear how folks get into this work because we all have such vastly different stories. So I appreciate you all sharing.
Also so many commonalities that don't come up when you're like naturally chatting at a conference or via email, you know, which is always fun to hear the narratives of how we all got here. And I think what brings us here today, which I know Melissa and I, Derek can attest to this, that when we started the season out and brainstorming, this episode was high on both of our lists and just trying to figure out where it made sense. And I think towards the end of the season actually makes a lot of sense because this whole season we've been talking about leadership in context, right? Of how do we contextualize the work we do? How do we factor in context in the way that we program or develop courses or support students, whatever it may be, from a variety of angles, but being folks who have done PhD work and write and in those spaces too, right? We also come back to then how do we assess, how do we research, how do we understand the context from an assessment, research, and evaluation standpoint? So given that and the importance of what we know is important of assessment, research, and evaluation, can you all speak to your journey a little bit more of coming into your work kind of from an AER perspective within leadership education? How do those two come together for the three of you?
Well, I'll jump in first, I guess, this time. So my foundations really of doing this work actually start out with how I even got interested in leadership and leadership development was through involvement in student organizations and wanting and working with student organizations. So I was always somebody who like Josh was talking about, wanted to engage, to make a difference, to try to do something. I saw something where I was like, this needs to be addressed, or I feel like we can do better work here. And so always wanted to engage in that, but never really saw myself as a quote unquote leader, given how leadership or leadership was discussed in my context. And so I eventually found myself in a student affairs program and then working in student activities because I was like, well, I want to work with folks doing this work and keep exploring this and discussing with students how they can engage more effectively within their student organizations. How can they create change with their student organizations? How do they create change within the spaces that they're in? And it was in that space that I realized, okay, I'm talking with students a lot about leadership and engaging in leadership and trying to figure out this concept myself as we engage in this process. But also I found myself wanting to like, how do we measure? How do we know we're effective? Or what's our impact? Or what's happening here? And so within the organization, the organizations that I advised, we were using various assessment techniques to understand where students were at. If that was a rubric, sometimes using rubrics to understand where they were developmentally in a process, other kind of feedback work that was coming from maybe peer debriefing of events or activities that were going on or other kinds of conversations. So it was all very within these particular organizations. And then that was what kind of sparked me to gain more interest in terms of like, well, I need to learn more about this. I know I have a limited understanding of leadership. I have a limited understanding of assessment and how we measure some of these things. And so that's when I pursued my PhD at Loyola University Chicago, because I wanted to work with John Dugan and the multi-institutional study of leadership. I was really fascinated with the work and recognized that not only does the MSL contribute to the leadership base, but also campuses were using this to better understand their campus and how students were developing on their campuses. So I really wanted to engage in that process in some sort of way. And so that's how I kind of not Well, I guess I didn't fall into it. I pursued that particular avenue and really now have been doing various roles where with assessment. So as a director of assessment and research at the Interfaith Youth Core, also working with some national studies around that and in discussing how do we understand this from a campus-wide lens on many of these campuses as we do use these campus-wide instruments? How can we better engage students in the leadership learning processes from that broader lens? And at the same time, how do we advance the research, the field, and understanding that with these bigger instruments? So that's how I kind of ended up in this space in education, leadership education, doing research and assessment.
So I think my journey into this, it really came through students. And I started to see some things through the eyes of my students, and then all of a sudden had a lot of questions. I think by nature, I'm a fairly curious person, and so I want to learn more about why things are happening, or maybe that's at the foundation of a lot of our research inquiries, is this curiosity just to learn more. But for me, I was at my first like leadership retreat that was whenever I transitioned to higher education. So now I'm in a university setting, and we had this big leadership retreat that actually happened before school started. And so there were probably 150 or so students, and I thought things were going really well. And then the student, I see a student on the side who's crying, and we had an upperclassman. The structure of the group was like we had upperclassmen mentors and things, and so we had an upperclassman mentor who was like sitting with the student and talking. And so I knew enough to stay away and let them kind of have that conversation. And then afterward, I walked up to the mentor and I said, "Hey, is everything okay?" And so then the mentor kind of took me over to the student and we had a quick conversation. But basically, the student had asked, where are all the other Black people here? And I looked around real fast and started to recognize that we had created a very homogenous group of people that was not representative of the student body. And this was a like one of those like a lot of leadership programs that are a bit selective and like who gets to come and who does not get to come. And so all of a sudden I knew that I needed to start assessing how, like this program, how are we making selections? How are we evaluating what leadership is? But I came into that absolutely through the eyes of my students. So by listening, by asking questions, and then recognizing that we were creating something that was absolutely not consistent with our own values. And then going through that assessment process, doing a lot of discovery, and then making the appropriate changes so that the group is, now far more representative of the student body. That was kind of at least one of my first steps into this assessment process. And I have a lot more stories of how students have said things or had experiences. And then it's just kind of started me down this trail of, oh, I'm really curious about this now and want to find out more. And sometimes what the students say are really hard things to hear. Like the program that we have is inequitable, there's not representing our values. And other times it's the students asking like a really interesting question that now all of a sudden I want to research. Why is it that some students are very quick to pick up new ideas and not, other students are far more resistant. So for me though, that has been true through all of my research assessments. It's always been seeing something for the first time through a student's eyes and then wanting to find out more.
Josh, I love that story. That's fantastic.
It's both heart-wrenching and good. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the beauty of research as well as assessment and evaluation. This whole notion of I'm going to ask a hard question and then I'm going to use inquiry, scholarly inquiry, To answer that question, and your story is just a beautiful example of that. I love that. So I can round out our conversation here on this question in terms of journey of coming into our work with assessment, research, and evaluation. So as I mentioned, I was a math major in college, so I've always loved me some numbers. But I had the wonderful gift of taking methods classes from Dr. John Creswell. He was on my supervisory committee, and I even got to be on his methods consulting team. So I've always loved me some numbers and certainly got to learn from the best in methods. My passion for wanting to contribute to assessment, research, and evaluation. And Josh and Ben, I'm curious to get your perspective on this too. My passion for wanting to contribute to that area actually came from being a reviewer. Too many times I would see manuscripts that would say something akin to, "Hi, I'm a leadership educator and I did a thing in class and everyone loved it. And four students said so in their course evaluations. So now everyone should do this thing." And then it'd be called a research paper. And I'm like, wait, what? So I just felt like I knew we could do better as a field with better training and resources. So that's really what led my journey to want to contribute to assessment, research, and evaluation.
I'm thinking about Josh's response too. And I think about how many people might be nervous to click on this episode to listen, right? Because AER are scary. And I think about somebody who went from a master's to PhD program. When I was in my master's program, I was like, there is no chance I'm getting a PhD ever, right? I'm going to go and be a practitioner and do the good work and boots on the ground. And I remember I was in my first outcomes class, which is what our program called it. And I had this instructor, Dr. Jillian Volpe White, who I'm forever indebted for, who made it less scary. And she was like, you all do this. You ask critical questions. You try to find answers. You prove the value of your work every day. You might not be doing it in formal assessment reports, but you're doing this informally every day, and then made that transferable to actual methods, actual instruments, actual language. And I'm hoping that folks are listening to this, you've either found that person or they're on the cusp of finding that person that makes this concept. And maybe you three will be this person on the episode that makes it less scary for them. Right. But it is, I think oftentimes for folks, again, it's something that's everyone's not called to the numbers or this, even the qualitative methods of it too. But for a lot of people, it's the person that makes it demystified, because people might love leadership and probably the people listening to this podcast already love the leadership education of it. But sometimes the AE and R are scary.
Absolutely. Whatever way we can lower the threshold of intimidation in assessment, evaluation, and research, the better. Sorry, I jumped on top of you, Josh. Sorry.
You're great. Absolutely. We need to lower that threshold. And yes, we are doing this work on a daily basis of asking critical questions. And I think many leadership educators, we do critically think through the things we're teaching and the programs and the classes. But it's so important to have intentionality with the assessment, with the research and evaluation of putting this together into an intentional process of saying, I want to make sure that the work we're doing actually is having the intended effect. And that type of planning and even just conversations among the teams that we have in leadership education, the benefit is great to doing that work kind of upfront.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what you all are talking about is actually bringing me back to a thought I had when you were introducing kind of how you got into assessment research work, was that the purpose of doing this in leadership education certainly is about proving that what you're doing is working or finding out what's not working. That's absolutely one reason for being sure that leadership educators can do assessment, evaluation, or research. But there, you also all have talked about other rationale as well, which I think is important for people to remember, right? I think when we come at a place of thinking that the only reason to do research or the only reason to assess programs is because you need to prove something is not attractive to some folks. It feels quite negative, actually. But when you start to think about the role that assessment and evaluation and research play in storytelling, in communicating about the importance, about the value, about a new idea that helps people think bigger, more expansively, more equitably, truly, like, assessment, evaluation, and research is one of the best ways that we can talk about those things and share information across our population. It's not the only way to tell a story, and certainly not the only way that we legitimize one another's work, but it is one of the most systematic ways that we have to do that. And I think, you know, Josh, to your point too, I think when we, especially from a practitioner lens, when practitioners feel like they can't step into that space or don't feel like they've got the, they don't have the efficacy around being able to engage in storytelling in that way, we're losing a really important voice in the work. And so that notion of lowering the threshold, demystifying AER, right, all of that is important, not just because we need to do it to prove our worth, but because it's one of the primary ways that we communicate with one another and start to, and continue to transform our field together.
I also think about, Lindsay, off of your point and Josh's, I think what I have really loved in leadership education and research work, and what I hope you all continue to hit on, is what I've liked in our field is I think we've really tried to peel back that all the critical questions are worth exploring, but with what avenue, right? Like, Lindsay, you're so right. Like, the four students that told you they loved that activity in their course evaluation is valuable information, but like, in what way, right? Like, what way is that? That's not maybe for a top tier research journal, but it could be really good for you to share at your staff meeting with the other instructors that are also teaching the class of like, hey, this worked for me. I got some good feedback. Maybe you all try it too. We have comparable students who are in our classes. Let's share this idea. And Josh, same with you. I think some of my, what's most energizing me in my work is the questions I get every day about our work. But again, thinking about like, is this just something I talk to my supervisor one-on-one about? Like, hey, I'm curious about this. Like, can we just do a little brain trust moment for 10 minutes and talk through what a critical question might look like or a solution that could be, or is this like a research project I need to get some time this summer in an IRB and see it through, right? And I think that's the really fun part about our field is, again, being so new as a discipline, I think we have a lot of playing we get to do with the critical questions that we have.
Absolutely. And I love that this particular podcast episode is getting into the notion of context, because it's critical, it's crucial. And if all we're doing, especially in assessment evaluation, is if all we're doing is proving the worth, checking the box, mm-hmm. we will have completely missed the, right. the larger story of impact, especially if we're not accounting for context, how we're applying what we're learning in context, what context we bring to how we make sense of what we're doing in this leadership education, we will have totally missed the boat. And so, Melissa, I love you're talking about storytelling should be a huge part of what we do, not just a matter of like, do you have a more positive attitude by virtue of this class, yes or no? So I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and look at that volley, Lindsay. Thank you for that. Let's talk a little bit more directly about context. So y'all, I mean, we could talk about context and how it affects the way you do your research. We could talk about context and leadership, and particularly that what about leadership you study. We could talk about context regarding the populations or student groups that you're looking at and looking into. I mean, when we think about the word context, particularly for the work that you all are doing in your research work, where do you see context maybe having the biggest impact, or where do you see it most crucially, like needing to pay attention to it?
First of all, I think context is crucial. We have got to get to a place where we fully understand leadership as being dynamic, collective, and contextually influenced. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I've thought about my own work or reading others' work, I mean, there's certainly a way that we can account for context, right? Like, we can model it statistically for accounting for the influence of nests within data, right? So like, one student's developmental pathway might be influenced by their particular classroom or their res hall, or by their particular degree program or a higher ed institution. You know, and that might be one way that we could name sort of a multi-level system as a unit of analysis. But however, when we think about lifespan leadership development, it's likely influenced by an entire host of contextual factors and their intersections, right? So we may need to use more novel methods. We may need to think about constructivist or critical qualitative research, using multiple methods or multiple data collection modalities, to get us to a place where we're not just analyzing surveys and interviews, maybe at multiple time points, but maybe we're integrating journals, maybe we're integrating artistic renderings, of prompt reflection to be able to understand the context that means the most to the particular student and that particular context and how it's actually influenced how they're learning. So as I was thinking about context, those were some things that came to mind.
Yeah, because I really don't know how we can divorce context from any of this work or understanding this, in that, you know, when you asked this, Melissa, I paused and I was like, I don't know if there's any particular way to focus on it. It's just ever present. Context is what the context we're in, I guess. I was like, context is always present, always there. And I often think about context as it relates to how people are making meaning of themselves and engaging in the leadership process, and whether they do step in or step out or foreclose on experiences, and how that comes into play. And so when I'm thinking about assessment and research, I'm often thinking not only about how, like, as you mentioned, Lindsay, like, how are we kind of structuring this to take a context into account, so that we take this in as a factor in investigating this, but also in the interpretation process of the results that we have. How am I being cognizant of the various ways that the context may be influencing certain student responses or their learning experiences in that space? So I'm often trying to figure out, I often see the interplay of context, the conceptualization of leadership, and mindsets. And I'm also looking at the ways that those align or don't align, and how that either fosters leadership development and engagement or inhibits it.
Lindsay, you mentioned like the different modalities that we can go down with research. I've 100% agree, because context matters in every context shapes behavior. So then of course context is going to shape data. And so I've been able to do some work inside of like arts-based research methods that I think really unlocks a new window into a student's experiences. And so as we're researching leadership education or, you know, our leadership programs or leadership practices, I think that that's a way. It's not the only tool, obviously, but I think it's a tool that we can lean into. So one of the things that I've done is with photo elicitation, so like participant generated photo elicitation, where students will bring pictures, and this was in my dissertation as well as one other work, of students will bring pictures of their leadership experiences. And then that's our like launching point for understanding, okay, so what did you learn from these experiences? Also, you know, the absence of data is data. And so it's a great way to find out what are the things that they are not learning from their leadership experiences, what are the experiences that they're not gaining from, at least their university experience. So I think, yeah, we can be creative. Also, I see that leadership is almost by nature a very transdisciplinary process. And so being able to tap into research methods that are tied to some of those different disciplines can be very helpful. And again, it's just a new angle for understanding how students are developing as leaders, even how we are developing as leaders. So I think that there is a lot there. Also with context, I'm very interested in study abroad. And so even just changing the context in which a student learns, I think has a lot of impact there. So those, and again, there's a lot of stories with study abroad that we can get into at some point, but changing context for where we are doing research, how we're engaging in assessment, I think all of those can make a big difference and maybe help us tell a fuller story.
You know, the older I get as a researcher and the more gray hairs that show up on my head, the more I have realized, okay, how dare I decide a priori what context matters to the leadership learners? How dare I decide, oh, it's their, whether or not they're in res life, that's what matters, or their gender identity or their ethnic identity. I mean, a piece of me is like, how dare I decide a priori what context is going to matter here? Because for every student, the context that they're bringing to that leadership learning, there are going to be different elements of that context that makes the difference for them. That does determine some of their implicit assumptions about leadership. And for each student, that's going to be different. So honestly, the older I get, the more I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Rather than me just like plugging these in as little variables in the equation, well, gender identity or ethnic identity or res life status, that's going to matter. The more I'm like, whoa, 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 wait, what about their pictures about what being a leader means to them? And there are a whole host of contextual factors that probably go into that picture. So how about they tell me what contextual factors are that they are bringing to bear on this leadership learning experience. So Josh, I love it that you talk about the arts, because I think there is so much we can do to unlock potential in leadership education, research, as well as assessment and evaluation using arts-based methods.
And especially with assessment, this is actually an easy way for practitioners to get into assessment. It's fun, it's creative. And so I would encourage people, anything from just bring a picture and let's talk about your leadership experience. And then you can evaluate from there, assess from there what has been salient and what has not been salient in a program, in a class. So those things, I think it's almost an easier way for some people to step into assessment.
Well, Josh, one of the things I used to work in the Excellence in Leadership program here at Marquette, which is a curricular-based program. It's a concentration here that students follow these tracks for 3 years. At the end of many of our classes, we do include a reflection, a final reflection, where it is just purely a reflection about like what are their biggest takeaways, what are they learning, which is very simple way to figure out what is sticking with students, what is resonating with students from your curriculum, from their experiences, that helps you understand, okay, you know, this is sticking. This is an area that's not quite sticking for or not resonating with them. What's going on there? I can explore that a little bit more if I want to, but even just simple things like that. And I've expanded in some other classes to include photo elicitation, but also creating a podcast, having a conversation with another colleague about these reflection questions, even a playlist, and an explanation of the playlist, and using all of those various pieces of information to explore what's resonating, what's sticking with them, and what's working with the curriculum.
Absolutely.
I was laughing, Lindsay, that you sounded like one of my committee members from my PhD, because when I did my prospectus defense, I was getting a higher ed PhD, but studying leadership. So I was like, I need to keep it really bounded within the college context, right? Like the whole point is I'm getting this higher ed degree. I should make sure it's studied there. And actually one of my methodologists on my committee was like, are you, and she's not a leadership person. She was like, are you implying that leadership starts in college? And I was like, no, like certainly not. And she was like, well, then you've got to capture that. So I pivoted to narrative inquiry, because it is, right? Like there's so much richness. And she said the same thing. Let them tell you what's important to the context that they bring in college, right? Like let them tell you their stories so they can tell you why this mattered, why this didn't, what was helpful, what wasn't, especially around capacity and efficacy work. Because there's 18 plus years of development that is going to contextualize that. And there's no way for us to say, like, take this brief survey and tell me all those things that happened so I can make sure I structure my interview questions accordingly. So I did that through some narrative and in interviews, but it was the same feedback I got from my committee members. You like, how are we to decide, like, oh, these three parameters, these factors are going to be the things that will then make sure the study is getting it to its aims. Oh, it's so much to sit with. I'm so excited. The next question is leading right into this. So we'll keep going for folks. I'm also giggling that we're now, you know, I think a good probably 20, 30 minutes into this conversation. And we haven't actually asked you to identify really any of your projects that you work on and that people probably know you from and are probably citing your work and other things you do. But really thinking for you all, I think you all at some point in your careers or in all points of your career have sat at some level being a practitioner and a scholar, right? Doing assessment and research, but also working with students, working with leadership learners, and being out in the community and places too. So for you all, as you think about research and assessment work you've done, whether it's previous projects, current projects, whatever you may be, what do you think leadership educators can take from your research and assessment work and apply to their practice, either in curricular, co-curricular, or maybe a bit of both of your work? What are you learning in the data? What are you digging with and sitting with that you think is helpful for folks?
I could jump in here.
I feel bad always talking first. Josh, you go.
Oh, it's good. I also love how we're really quick to jump in on all these fun ideas that we have. And when you ask us like about our specific work, we're like, well, that's not nearly as interesting. Okay, so my specific work, I, coming at this just from my experiences with and through students that I've been able to like be honored to share in their experiences and their story. My research is primarily focused on like socially just leadership. It looks a lot at the intersection of leadership and race, especially in kind of a post 2020 world where there is a lot of focus on kind of the tension or racial tension in the US. And so some of my studies, my dissertation was basically on how white student leaders, undergraduate student leaders understand the intersection of race and leadership. So that was a piece of my work. I also have been able, been lucky to write with Dr. Amber Manning-Ouellette. And we did a fun piece. It's very short. But it was translating Vygotsky's zones of proximal development into leadership learning. And that's been something that both as a practitioner and a scholar has been a fascinating kind of piece to explore of all the ways in which, as leadership educators, we're constantly bumping into this framework that Vygotsky kind of put out about growth zones, which is like that zone of proximal development, but also the places where people have already mastered things, and then the places where people are not able to even like enter that conversation just yet. And so, you know, we call those either panic zones or red zones. And those spaces happen in socially just leadership education that I think colloquially we call triggers. But they're just those spaces where students, we bump into something, and if we're not very skilled or very intentional about the way in which we're kind of presenting some of the socially just leadership ideas, our conclusion was that you could actually drive students further away from socially just ideas, entrenching students in places because of they feel a threat to either previously held values or some like core identity. So that's just some of the work that I've really enjoyed getting to do.
Ben and I are like
having a standoff.
Our eyes.
Nonverbal. For an audio recording, I wish you all could see the nice finger pointing that's happening.
Well, I can go next. So actually one of my favorite projects throughout the course of my career was doing a New Directions volume with my buddy Dave Rush at University of Illinois, specifically looking at assessment and evaluation and research in leadership education. And that volume was 100% about trying to lower the threshold of intimidation around how do we go about doing assessment and evaluation well with our leadership programs, as well as how do we conduct broader inquiry in the leadership field. Because we were fully recognizing that a lot of people come to leadership education having received their PhD not from an R1 institution. So they didn't have the chance to take methods classes from John Creswell, right? Or they never took a regression class. And so they shouldn't necessarily be penalized for that or feel like they can't play in assessment and evaluation or in research. So it's specifically in the space of assessment, evaluation, and research. I had a ton of fun working with Dave, putting together that New Directions volume.
I think for me, a couple things are coming to mind in terms of just kind of the research. I find myself continuing to bounce or kind of circle back to ideas around mindset. So I've kind of alluded to this or discussed this a couple times earlier, but I just keep thinking about the stories we tell ourselves and the self-concepts that we have and how we understand leadership. And I just imagine the number of people in our world that foreclose on engaging in spaces and helping to produce change or working with others for many, just kind of the stories they tell themselves because of how leadership is discussed within society or conceptualized and they don't fit that. Therefore, they opt out and they don't engage. And what missed opportunities do we have for transforming our communities and our spaces because of that? So I keep coming back to mindset and how our conceptualization of leadership, the context, and how we view ourselves keep the alignment of those three. So that's something as I move forward with my work, I'm continuing to explore very psychological constructs around some of those things. But also, so that's from a research side of things. I was also thinking from the assessment side of things. And oddly enough, I think it's kind of fortuitous that this conversation is happening because this semester I'm teaching leadership development in higher education course, as well as environmental theory and assessment. And so both of these worlds are happening right now and having conversations with students about how we are doing assessment work and using examples from the work that I did with the Excellence in Leadership program and how we wove together and tried to creatively embed as much assessment pieces into the work we were already doing. We are already collecting information from these classes. We are already engaging with these students in various ways. And just what are the ways that we're going to be systematic about some of these things and use that information to inform change? How do we tell the story? So we're also trying to figure out, yeah, it's nice that we have kind of quantitative data points, but these reflections also gave us powerful stories and narratives that we try to weave the stories together in terms of the quantitative work as well as the narratives to help us improve our work to better, as we've talked about before, we've really got to, I often am like, how do we do this better? How do we do this better? I consider myself a tweaker. I often want to keep tweaking to make something better. But then also continuing to learn how important this is for telling our story, especially to funders out there. I mean, the reality of higher education right now and being able to effectively tell them, this is the impact we're having. These are the stories and the narratives of folks coming out and showing them that work. So just trying to think of, I think it's important for us to keep in mind how we are telling the story, how we're weaving together the pieces of information so that we can understand our impact for ourselves and others.
I feel like I can jump in as someone who works in curricular and co-curricular leadership development, that all three of your research is something I use often on my own practice, but teaching students. So Josh and Lindsay are both in a forthcoming Journal of Leadership Studies symposium that is coming out this summer, small teaser. But I just did a session last week at a leadership conference here in Maryland about when generativity goes quote unquote wrong. Like how do we teach students what to do when their organizations are generative in maybe not the best ways, right? They maybe reach that, but not in ethical or conductive or moral ways. And cited both of your work on, right? Like, how do we take systems thinking? How do we think of generativity on a large scale with quantitative methods and think about that with students? And it made it really digestible. And thinking about particularly MSL is the foundation of my dissertation work, but also thinking about, I used to teach a gender and leadership class, and being able to use some of those early findings around gender was like, made it real for students to be able to say, like, there's actually an incongruence in men and women on college campuses around capacity and efficacy. And it was a buy-in for my students. Then they could understand all the theories and the concepts and the podcasts and all that too. But sometimes they need that foundation of like, I promise people have looked, like here it is, right? Like here, whether it's a small data set or a big one or a narrative or qual or quant or mixed methods, sometimes the students for the buy-in even need just to see that, you know, we've got really smart folks looking at telling you that this is an area, and maybe we don't have the solution yet, but then it invites them to the solution too, which I think is really great, and especially teaching. But I see it in co-curricular work all the time too.
I gotta say, one of the things I appreciate the most about hearing you all talk about your work and the role of context in it is remembering too that in our lovely community of leadership educators, those of us that are engaging in the scholarship of that field, do so with such a practitioner lens and such an applied lens. And that's what you all bring to this, right? You are brilliant, brilliant scholars and brilliant researchers. And your that notion of, okay, but how do we use this? And what do we use it for? And who is going to read this? And how can I write this in a way? How can I structure this study in a way? How can I engage with students in this process in a way that's really going to mean that people, educators, can use this on the ground? And I I know we've kind of danced around that topic a little bit, but I want to point that out, I think, for the folks listening, that like one of the things I love about this field is that even those of us that are deeply in the scholarship of it are doing it with such a practical lens. And that is not true in all disciplines and fields. And so just thank you to the three of you, I think, for how connected you stay to that part of your work, because it is so helpful. And I think it brings me honestly to kind of our closing question, right? Like, you all have been a part now of this ongoing storytelling of the importance of leadership education, how leadership learning and development happen, particularly in the context of education and community spaces. You have built on that history, that narrative of that literature. Where do you see leadership research and assessment going moving forwards? Are there lines of inquiry that you're engaging in that you're really excited about, or gaps that you think we still need to fill? Like, what are some of those exciting kind of questions that you hope you get to dabble in, or that you hope that others in our field get to explore a bit?
Well, Melissa, I loved this question. In fact, it got me thinking and writing even before our podcast here today, because I kept coming back to this notion of like, okay, we have to get to a place where we understand leadership as dynamic, meaning dynamic, not static, at one point in time. We have to understand it as collective, not singularly about the leader. And we also have to understand leadership as being influenced by context. Okay, so it has to be this sort of widespread acknowledgement that leadership is a complex beast as a phenomenon. And so how can we go about inquiry to get at some of that complexity? And so three things came to mind, and Josh and Ben, I'm genuinely curious to get your thoughts on this. So three things came to mind, but I'm thinking about it more from an approach to how we go about doing research and assessment and evaluation, not necessarily content. So Josh and Ben, I'd love to hear your thoughts on even content as well. But the first thing that came to mind was, okay, if we're going to get at the complexity, the complex beast of the leadership phenomenon, then I think first we have to recognize multiple levels and time periods and how leadership development is measured. And that when we're talking about leader and leadership development, we're likely talking about intrapersonal changes. We're talking about interpersonal changes. We're probably talking about team or group level leadership changes. And those changes will likely happen at multiple points in time, and not in a linear fashion, right? So maybe we shouldn't collect data when everyone's bawling and hugging right at the end of our programs, but think about it over an extended period of time. And so how might that inform things like depending on the desired focus and resources of a particular leadership development program? You know, a leadership educator could identify short and long-term outcomes at both individual and collective levels, articulate associated program goals and objectives, and then be able to identify measures whose item stems or prompts appropriately indicate individual changes versus collective changes, for example. So that was one thing. So recognizing multiple levels and time periods and how leader and leadership development is measured. The second thing that came to mind was measuring leadership development in a way that accounts for change over time. Again, recognizing that change doesn't happen in a straight line, right? So in thinking about how can we lower the threshold of intimidation of using growth curve models or even using multiple modalities of how we collect data to get at growth that isn't exactly linear. How can we better demonstrate spiraling changes up or down? So that was the second thing I thought. It was measuring leadership development in a way that accounts for change over time, in ways that aren't just linear. And then the third thing that came to mind was, okay, coming around to the purpose of this podcast too, modeling and exploring the influence of intersections and context on leadership development. So again, we can think about how we do things statistically to better account for context through things like nested data, right? But coming back around to what Josh was talking about earlier with using the arts to help us collect data better. How can we get at intersections? Because I'm not sure we do such a great job of that. And if we only rely on statistics, I feel like we only see or experience one part of the story for how and why leadership learning is happening. So how can we use novel methods to get at intersections of context? And, you know, for example, in a population of 150 students, for example, who are involved in a leadership program, how can we account for a completely unique context influencing each of those participants? And I have to be convinced that there's a way to do it if we're willing to get creative.
You mentioned, but go ahead. Go ahead,
Mel. I was just going to say all of our proponents of immersion experiences, so like retreats, camps, workshops, mm-hmm. would love if you could figure that out.
Please scan the QR code, like tears QR code.
Lindsay, you were talking about like change over time and how important it is to recognize that that's not always a linear process for leadership development. We've done an assessment about leadership self-efficacy to where, you know, the beginning students who are right out of high school coming into their first year of college, they would take this assessment. And one of the big questions that we have on the assessment is measuring efficacy. And then we have a similar question at the very end of their first year. And it is without fail, their efficacy is much lower at the end of their freshman year of college than it was before their first year of college. And that's always for us like, oh, good, we did something right. Their efficacy went down. That's not what we want long term, but that's a much more realistic evaluation of where they really are. But it's because that their experience, the context that they've had, really does change. And so then that changes the way we see ourselves. And then that changes the way that we interact with our space and our world. And that leadership development is not always a straight line, or at least our evaluation, like our self-understanding, our self-assessment of that is definitely not a straight line. So I do love your thought of like, yes, this is going to change over time. And we have to be able to look at, like, if we're looking at the future, we do need some longitudinal studies, or we need more work that is looking at long-term effects of some of our student leadership development, either programs, experiences, courses.
Josh, I love what you're talking about around growth, in that I wonder if some of it is around just completely shifting our own mindset on what growth means. Because I think for all of us, so long as growth is up and to the right, well, then it's good. And that's kind of what we assume, that growth is good so long as that growth is up and to the right. But that's not life. I mean, I'm thinking even as a middle-aged working mother, right? There are times when I feel like my spiral is definitely going down more often than it's going up. But that doesn't mean I'm not growing, right? So some of it may come down to completely shifting our mindset about what growth means, because sometimes growth means going down. That doesn't mean growth isn't happening. So I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially with self-awareness, right? The more we become self-aware, that helps tremendously. And sometimes that's not always positive.
I was going to say, Josh and Lindsay, all of us have read a leadership studies class paper where the students were like, I was a leader all through high school and I was on captain of everything, blah, blah, blah. And then they come to class and they feel like, oh, I really didn't know what a leader was, right? And we don't factor for that as a result of their first leadership studies class or retreat or program. Yeah, it probably is going to trend down, right? Because they didn't really know what it was before. I would have been like that in college, right? I talk about all the time, my first scholars program, I was like, oh shoot, I have no idea. Like, got a lot to learn. But I think again, yeah, that trends over time, if it's not going up, it feels like we've quote unquote failed at the intervention, right? When that's oftentimes not the case, but it isn't captured in the way that we want it to.
I mean, and when I was a high school leadership teacher, we basically just made a lot of t-shirts. And students also did some other great, great things. But I think for a lot of students, their leadership experience in high school was figuring out how to make a lot of t-shirts. And so, you come to a university setting and that changes a lot. And then maybe I have some more things to learn that I didn't know I needed to learn.
Think about Lindsay's, you know, your question earlier about the change over time, the different time points. One of the things I keep wondering about, this is a pipe dream in my head in terms of kind of possibilities for the future. Although I don't know if it's much of a pipe dream, I just don't know if we in education have caught up with other industries. But, we have all these apps and technology where there could be regular check-in point, like an app where people check in or kind of fill something out at different points throughout their day, throughout their life, that that they're, I think sometimes we do the one big survey or the one big thing, and it's at that one time point, and they only have this one context in mind, but we know they're living in many different spaces and contexts, and there's a lot of different factors at play in their life, and we just happen to catch them at that one time and get the data point at that one time. But there's, as you said, there's all these kind of spirals and cycles that people are going through, and it's not a linear process. And so I keep wondering about, like, how can technology, how can apps and different things like that be used as a mutually beneficial tool for research, for collecting information and data that would help us maybe explore some of these spirals or these things that are happening with folks, and be a self-reflective tool for folks in a process. So I keep imagining someday creating, you know, an app where people are reflecting on various prompts, or even, you know, whether it's like one scale, random day or whatever kind of thing. So it could be prompt scales, even goals that they set for themselves, and exploration about how they're progressing along those things. And if there's all these little pieces at different time points, how do we see the various ways that people are going through cycles or developing in their journey?
Ben, I love that because, okay, I'm thinking about, there was a chapter that Day and Lou wrote in 2019 in that What's Wrong with Leadership book that Ron Riggio edited, but essentially saying, like, we've got to get away from events-based leadership development. It's not showing gains like we want it. We got to quit training every student leader on the silver bullet leadership theory, right? But they were saying that, like, we need to do more to embed leadership development within everyday experiences, which comes back around to context, right? If we can embed leadership development in their context, then maybe they're able to use their context to learn in ways that are more meaningful for them. They can make meaning of what we're talking about in leadership education in ways that do create growth in their context. So Ben, I love what you're talking about, and that if we can find better ways to be part of the everyday, not that we're going to take you out of class, we're going to take you to the weekend retreat, but rather maybe we have the weekend retreat, but then we are embedding leadership development in your everyday experiences. We're infusing mentoring and coaching. You're doing reflections just in time. You're making drawings just in time, right? You know, I think there's so many ways that we can unlock leadership learning within context, utilizing tools that you just described, Ben.
I love that too, because I think what y'all are getting at is what many of our listeners, even on this podcast, have known for a long time, right? That the leadership learning moments are happening all over the place across different, especially if you think about higher ed and all the different points at which there's an opportunity to learn something new about leadership, they are all over the place. And we don't capitalize on those opportunities unless we're prompting people to think about that. And so when you, this, I think, also goes back to, like, it doesn't take the place of a program or a course or an intentional interaction where maybe we're having you explore leadership ideas and theory explicitly. That's important, because not because that's the only place you're going to get that information or that experience, but because that is going to help you then in other contexts pick out the leadership learning that's happening when it's happening in the moment, right? We're training you in this space so that you can make meaning of the leadership lessons happening in all kinds of other spaces. And that's the piece, I feel like, that we need to get better at making those connections explicit. So I'm so on board with what you all are talking about right now, 100%.
I wonder if I can pose one other, it's like a sub question of this question that I think is helpful. So the 2 years I've been doing this podcast, one of our main aims is that for practitioners or folks who just have a lot on their plate, right? They don't have time to read every new article that comes out, every new space that comes out. So within you all, and I think you've mentioned a couple of these, but I wonder for our listeners, if we can just have kind of this resource bank, either things that you're writing or researching or other people's writing and research that's maybe just like getting you excited about our field collectively, where it's going. So I don't know if you can share anything, again, podcasts, articles, things you're working on that are coming up that you think folks that listen to this podcast should be looking at and reading too. I wonder if we can do some resource sharing, because I know that folks have shared with us in the past, it's been helpful to hear where their eyes should be going first, maybe.
Actually, you're not going to like my answer, because I will say, actually, my favorite moment in time for expanding my thinking and sort of blowing my mind is like over a glass of wine with someone I enjoy at a conference. So like having a glass of wine with Melissa, right? And just like, just tell me what you're thinking about and just like letting her talk. Oh my gosh, my mind is blown. So, I mean, certainly, you know, I do the reading and, you know, so in that way I check the box, but honestly, I have found over time that the more I can be with other people physically and be able to have a more relaxed moment, again, over a cocktail or mocktail or whatever, but to just listen to folks talk genuinely and authentically about the work they do, those are the times when, my mind really expands.
I think Lindsay just invited you all to come to Leadership Educators Institute or ILA, the International Leadership Association Conference this fall. Both are happening this fall. There's your plug. Go see Lindsay. Come have a glass of wine with us.
Your calendar's open.
Well, 100% though, I agree with Lindsay. Some of the best conversations I've had, some of the best learning I've had. It's always in interacting with just really great fellow leadership educators. It's been fun to make those friendships and partnerships across, not just across the U.S., but with ILA. I mean, you're meeting leadership educators from all over the world, and it's a fabulous way to engage in the community. One thing that I have loved is that the leadership educator, at least the community that I have been able to engage with, is some of the most welcoming, accepting people. And so if you feel as if you don't belong, please just remind yourself that that's the imposter syndrome setting in. It's absolutely not true. Come talk with us. We'd love, love, love to hear the new ideas. In terms of like some of the work that Brittany, you were asking about, you know, looking forward, I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done when it comes to how we engage leadership learners in systems thinking, systems education. Like I feel like there is a gap there, and I think a lot of people are trying to address that gap, but that's a place I see us moving forward. There's a natural inclination for some of like the earlier scholarship to go into just a leader development model or mode. But the natural outcome of the process that we kind of have shifted to as scholars, then that natural outcome then is, well, leaders then are the ones who are creating, revising, disrupting systems. And so I think there's a lot of work that can be done on that systems side. I think it can be pretty exciting work too. I know Jonathan Kroll with Leadership Trainer, he has some work that's out on that. And that's been exciting to kind of hear some of his ideas and thoughts on it.
I think going from a big expansive systems perspective, I think going to
smaller space. It's not a recent text or anything like that, but it's something that's sticking with me throughout this term in particular. So emergent strategy by Adrienne Marie Brown, and thinking about fractals. She talks about fractals in there, these little repetitions in nature. And I keep thinking about all the little moments. I think this also goes with my thoughts around kind of mindset, self-concept and context, all the little moments and the little ways that we show up in which we could be, those can be powerful in the transformation process for self, but also community. And how are we, I think often we look at leadership and look for those big, huge, transformative, massive changes. And there's a lot of power in the small everyday changes as well. So I'm trying to, so that's something that's sticking with me. And it's been a interesting, a read that just kind of just sparked a lot of, I have no idea how to say this, just got me percolating, thinking about some of these things on a smaller level.
Mm-hmm. And Ben, I loved what you were talking about earlier too, of the stories that we tell ourselves and how impactful that is in a person's develop like their efficacy. So yeah. It takes so much courage to engage in the leadership process. And if the stories that we tell ourselves, if they self-defeating and it doesn't even allow us to step into the arena, like that seems like a crucial early step in leadership development.
Yeah.
I'm smiling that Lindsay, the question I posed was more me geeking out, but also funny that your start of the answer, I guess it goes back to your dynamic, collective, and context drivenness of your AER, right? Like it is that like it's hard to say like, oh, this one work or this one study is what I'm sitting with, because again, it's all dependent. I think that's why a lot of us enjoy going to conference and sitting in space together, because we can be in that moment together saying like, what do we make of it all, right? And I think it's also the meaning making in all of us as getting to our metacognition in our leadership, right? In our own leadership learning journey of just trying to make sense of people who also get just as excited as we do. So I know that this podcast, I think, will maybe intimidate some, but I think you all made it less intimidating. So it might be intimidated to click, but I think you all have really made this AER work feel less scary.
Well, and I will say too, I've Josh and Ben, I'm going to speak on behalf of you as well. So you can send me the hate mail later, but I would say to your listeners, this, like, call us, email us, stop by, like you're not bothering us to ask us questions, about assessment and evaluation or in research. There's no such thing as a stupid question. We have all been in a space where we weren't sure how to take a step forward in assessment and evaluation or in research. We've all been in that spot. And so I, knowing Josh and Ben as I do, I can guarantee that any one of us, if you want to just reach out to us to ask a question about how to take a step forward, we'd be happy to help.
Absolutely.
Well spoken.
Yeah,
we'll send you the hate mail later.
Email. He's drafting it as we speak. He's muted and started drafting his follow-up email. I think Melissa and I can both echo that, knowing the three of you, and the reason I think we invited you to the podcast is you do this work all the time and you encourage so many other folks to feel empowered in a space, I think, in a niche of our field that feels the most intimidating, I would argue, of leadership education, right? I think I've watched it in LEI or an ILA or some of these conferences where people are like, I'll go to the really practitioner focused sessions, but the research ones probably aren't for me, right? And think that they're not supposed to be in those spaces. So I know that the three of you are doing good work to make sure everyone knows that we need them in this work.
And Brittany, I think along those lines, we can do this work collaboratively. So if it's one of those things where you want to engage in it, but it's intimidating, you're not sure, then get a team together and tackle it as a team. There's so much great, great work, whether it's an assessment, evaluation, or in research. There's so much great work that can be done just from a group of people getting together who are really curious and want to find out a little bit, you know, understand a situation a little bit more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Y'all are amazing. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for joining us. Such a treat to hear from you all.
And you can see these fabulous spaces at the Leadership Conference Circuit in the fall, but don't forget about LEI, you know? Melissa, I shameless plug again. LEI program proposals are open.
That's right.
But yes, thank you three of you for joining us. This is I literally took notes, so in case anyone saw me writing things down, I was taking my own notes for things that sparked new ideas and things too. But we're really appreciative of y'all's time, and they mean it. Reach out. So if you listen to something and you heard a question that sparked in your brain, reach out to any of us, and we'd be happy to chat. Cool. Thank you all.
Thank you, Reverend Assam.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I feel like every time after these episodes, we're like, we learned so much, but this was like a different part of my brain. I feel like that got scratched with them of like, it almost felt like being in your favorite session of a PhD methods class, like in the best way. We're really excited about like it all finally starting to click together, right? Like that moment in the methods class where you're like, oh, this is connected to this. And this is energizing because we can answer questions. And I feel like that's what that whole conversation was. It's like that aha moment you had the one time in class where you're like, oh, it all is clicking and it's going to be really good.
Yeah. And here's, I think I'm almost reflecting on too, the, just the variation in the ways they've all been involved in assessment, evaluation, and research work. I want to make sure, like, I know we're lumping those together in this conversation, yeah. And they did such a beautiful job of kind of talking about things that are applicable across all three of those things. Yeah. What I love about especially these three that is that they've been involved with all three of those things, right? I think about the vast amount of research and scholarship that someone like Lindsay is doing, right? In a tenured faculty role where she is just a production house, right? She does amazing quality production work, especially in quantitative methods related to leadership education, which is like, if y'all haven't read her work, please go Google that, because
any doc students that are doing quant methodology, you should
oh
be
my
reading
goodness.
Dr. Lindsay Hastings' work.
100%. And yet can also talk about like this really kind of developmental, like individual unit of measurement, right? Exploring development in people. Like she can still talk that game, which I'm just always so impressed by. And then I think about Ben, right? Who's talking so deeply about his experience teaching in a higher ed student affairs program right now. And at the same time is like responsible for this massive multi-institutional study of leadership that has like all this amazing history, and he's been involved in so much of it. And just the body of data and scholarship that has come out of that is just massively impressive. And then I think about someone like Josh, who is so deep into the socially just leadership education world and trying to create knowledge that helps practitioners really understand, like, at the heart, what does it mean for us to support students in learning about leadership in this way? And so practical, I think, for what we're doing, and the colleagues that he's working with, they're just doing such amazing work to translate that for our leadership educator community. So just the impact, I think, and the fact that they're all doing this on like big scale and small scale and like everything in between. It just impresses me so much about these three.
One of my favorite parts of the conversation was actually the very beginning, Melissa, which I think really hits to what you're talking about, is like when we talked to them about how they got to research or assessment or evaluation or all three, right? You can tell by the lenses of their work how different their answers were, but they were all the same in the best way too, right? Like they were getting to like really, I think Josh said it best when he was like, it's just the development of critical questions and then finding like the vehicle, right? Of like, what is again, this critical question is something you talk with the student about, is that student going to then spur a critical question? That's his dissertation. That's how that happened for him. Right. And then I think Lindsay echoing that, like, yeah, she has had to find even in a tenure track role, which is perceived as only being research, right? Only high level research, like also finding sometimes it is just a survey that they need to assess and understand what's going on, and then use that to inform her. Even Lindsay talking about, again, like the multiple modes that we can collect data through, right? It doesn't always have to be rigid QR code for post-assessment, right? Or these other things too. I was thinking a lot about, and we've talked about this too, but two things I literally wrote down on a pad of paper was Lindsay's kind of like coding of our conversation around leadership education and AER, of the dynamic collective in context, right? Like, and that's almost our whole season, right? And if you're taking an assessment lens on it, that's, I think, the framework you come to. If you were coding the analysis of our season and our conversations, that's it, right? That leadership is dynamic, it's collective, and it's contextually driven. So those three, I mean, I kept coming back to it without saying it, is like those three are so key. And then her three things of looking forward, once we kind of ended our conversation with them, we talked about like, that's the whole point of why people have like really love leadership education research, but also sometimes hate it, because they're like, yes, but that's really hard to capture, right? Like, if, again, like we joked, if you take a leadership studies class and your efficacy declines, we might know that's because you're learning more about what leadership really is, what it looks like, and maybe it's not look like what you thought it was before. But that doesn't look really good on a piece of paper, right? For evaluation and assessment folks that like have to report something out. So thinking about, like, I think that often shies people away from doing the work. And I love that they named that, because I think it, once we can name it, we can try to troubleshoot it too.
Well, and what incredible ideas they all had for challenging that notion of like time and point information, and instead looking at things more holistically. I mean, Ben's idea about the app where you can like collect like data from just people's random reflections during the day, right? And prompting students to do that across different contexts that they might be in, and all of a sudden have learned something about leadership and want to log it. You know what I mean? Like that. Such a brilliant way to think about, or to rethink what we're collecting, what we're paying attention to in terms of data. And then from Josh's standpoint, I mean, that note about systems thinking and how we are so focused on, we've talked about this before, the unit of measurement being the individual and the individual's development, what the individual is learning, how the individual is developing, what was the catalyst for that for the individual, and then forgetting to think about what the implications are there for the system or the structure or the organization that they are embedded in, and what the impact there is, and how those two things influence each other. I mean, just brilliance all around.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, as I'm quoting a line from Kathy Guthrie and Dan's book, at like, you know, leadership education really is still in somewhat of its infancy, right? Like you look at sociology, it's been around for 300 plus years, and leadership as a phenomenon has been, but actually studying, understanding it is still relatively new as we think about it as a discipline and an educational field. And I think about folks like these, like, I think I'm so energized because like these are scholars who are really creating a pathway for us to just understand what can sometimes feel really basic, right? Of like, yeah, like sometimes it is that you like blow it up in an intervention. And sometimes the intervention is not just like you, again, I loved the line about when they're sobbing and then you ask them to do the survey. Like that's like something we should critically ask ourselves, right? Like a lot of programs do that, national and campus-based programs. We'll say like, you have ended retreat. Before you pack up your bags and walk home, please scan this QR. Why are we not doing that at the end of every day or in the middle of the afternoon when something is fresh on their brains, right? Like capturing and just questioning the ways that we're getting data, especially for something as nuanced as leadership, right? This is not a just, you pass said exam, you pass said thing, you've done X, Y, Z, black and white intervention. This is, it's much more dynamic than that. So yeah. I loved this. Even the small questions, I think that they probably thought were inconsequential. I was like, holy smokes, I need to write that down.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is also a good moment too, to remember that, you know, our field of leadership education and leadership learning and development does not grow without folks asking critical questions and studying and either communicating informally or publishing about those things. And so these folks are doing that. They're doing that work. They're doing it with connection to folks who are every day running programs and teaching classes. And they're also doing it to continue the work of the people that have come before us, right? This is a very generative process. And there are folks that, I'm feeling very grateful, I think, in this moment for the folks in our field, many of whom are still around, who started researching about these things formally, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, and the way that we're able to then dive more deeply into that at this phase of the field's existence. And all that is to come is exciting as well. But I'm reflecting, I think, on that.
Yeah, and I wanted to echo, and I know Mel, you agree with this too, that when the three of them said they're available for an email or a quick Zoom call or to schedule a coffee at a conference, like they mean that. And for folks that are listening, that something here got you excited, but you don't have anyone on campus to process that with, or maybe you're new to the field and just haven't made a connection yet, like really take that invitation and send the email, even if it doesn't result in some big survey or study design or philosophical conversation that comes of it. Like, you don't know how much it means to them as well to hear like, hey, I heard that and that stuck with me and got me excited about something. That will mean just as much, if not more, to them than it will to you. And again, it's a great way to make a connection. So even in a year from now, when you're at a different conference and you run into each other, that name recognition is there too. So that's the way that we build our community, is putting ourselves out there. And especially when it's something that can feel like there's a barrier of entry, like assessment, research, and evaluation, this is a great way to open the gates.
Great.
Yeah. So we'll see y'all in a couple of weeks. Our season's wrapping up. So I think we've got maybe a reflection episode left of us kind of tying the bow, closing the loop, if you will, for assessment folks. And then we might hit summer.
I mean, I hope we hit summer. Ready.
Fingers crossed. Ready,
and I bet you all are too.
This is being recorded and probably released very close to our last weeks of classes and finals. That's so true. Yeah, we were hoping, really, really hoping for summer.
All right, y'all, until next time.
See you soon.
Registration is open now for the 2024 Leadership Educators Institute, happening December 9th through 11th in Philadelphia. Program proposals are due by May 27th, 2024. Find out more at nclp.umd.edu/programs.